Let's give our presenter a warm welcome.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Hiro, and I am an alcoholic. I am grateful to be here, grateful to be sober. And what I am going to do is I'm going to press the share screen and get this PowerPoint up and then change it to do slideshow mode, play from start. There we go. So thank you so much for having me. Andy and Steve asked me to come in and do this on behalf of the central office. And I'm presenting on the pamphlet, A for Alcoholics with Mental Health Issues and Their Sponsors, or subtitle, How to Be a Medical Advocate for Your Sponsee or Loved One in Psychiatric Care. And so grateful to be here. Let's see, a few things you should know about me, that I am an alcoholic. And I have a sobriety date of November 12, 2007. One of the founding members of my home group, Ray M., he passed away 6 years ago, but every time he would talk, he would give his day count, because in the morning he would write down his day count in the 24-hour book. And today's a fun number. Mine is 5,550 today, which is fun. My home group is the Bellflower Big Book Group. We meet on Monday nights, and we're post-lockdown, we're back up to fighting strength with about 300 people in person and about 150 on Zoom, the last time I checked. And I also want to let you know that not only have I taken all 12 steps and I've been sponsored and I'm currently sponsoring, that service has always been a part of my sobriety. When I was really new, I was having a lot of difficulty and complaining to my sponsor about it. And he invited me to come down to my first home group, the Roundtable in Long Beach. And he asked me to do things that felt insultingly custodial. And it turned out that, and then I asked him, why are you having me like empty butt cans and take out the trash and mop the floor and clean up the bathroom? And he said, well, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And of course he asked me that question when I asked him to sponsor me, and I said, yes. And like so many things in life, and especially in AA, just like the 19th century philosopher Søren Kierkegaard said, we have to live our lives forward, but we can only understand them backward. My backward understanding is that my sponsor was showing me the long form of the first tradition, and through his actions, through his example. And he was showing me how to make you, how to make my home group, how to make AA, how to make other alcoholics more important than me, with my welfare coming closely afterward. Here's my service resume. In 2010, in my home group, in 2012, in my home group, this woman, Barbara F. Let me know that she was she puts her arm around me and says, "Honey, I'm your service sponsor." And I said, "Thank you. I don't know what that means." Said, "Well, you're gonna be GSR for a home group one day, honey, and you're also gonna be delegate for our area someday." And I said, "I don't know what the second thing means, but the first thing I know what that means. The district meeting meets on Wednesday nights. I can't possibly do that. I work that night." She says, "Honey, God is gonna change your schedule for you." And he did. And I soon after became the alternate GSR for our home group. Then our GSR went to a jail on an amends, not on a sober event, but on a to make a, up for a past event. And so I was quickly a GSR. Then I finished up that rotation, completed the next rotation, and also became the Grapevine representative at the same time for our district. After that 2-year panel was up, I was chosen out of the hat to be the chair of District 4. And then at the same time, I was chairing the GSR school at the area in Mid-Southern California, Area 09. Then the custom in our district in Long Beach at the time was for outgoing chairs to stay another 2 years as the GSR school chair at a district. And so I did that the following 2 years. Well, I was also the DCM school chair for the area. And then I was voted into being the chair of the area for the following panel. Actually, again, chosen out of the hat, and then chosen out of the hat once more to be the alternate delegate. And I had to resign, unfortunately. COVID hit, and I discovered that I'm one of the few people that gets Zoom fatigue so badly that I had migraines that were so awful. I was losing 1 to 3 days of work every week and throwing up. And it was like kind of being a teen drinker again. Today, I'm happy to say I'm now the home group bathroom captain. I'm an alcoholic, and it's important for you to know that as a result of AA education, supervised clinical experience, hard work, I'm a licensed psychologist in California. And so psychologists talk, not drugs. And I love the long form of the eighth tradition. I do my 12th step work for fun and for free. I don't treat alcoholism. I don't treat addiction. If someone can accidentally show up as a patient and need it. And what I do is gently help that person to go to the fellowship that would be helpful for them and get sponsored. Of course, I'm not your therapist. I'm not even dispensing medical advice. I'm just giving you best practice information about how to be a good medical advocate for your sponsees in AA. So all of this entire presentation is based out of this pamphlet. And this is one of our most recent pamphlets. What's really amazing is that our recent pamphlets have been so, so good. This is a favorite. I read this with sponsees. Another one that's a favorite of mine is the God Word, which was borrowed from or adopted from UK General Service. And is all about agnostics and atheists having a spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the QR code can get you to download a copy for your device. This is all from the afterword. And the afterword is actually adapted from the beginning of an older pamphlet, Medications and Other Drugs, with the AA member. So let's see, how can I collapse this? There we go. So from pages 41 to 42 of the pamphlet, P87, AA for Alcoholics with Mental Health Issues and Their Sponsors. And I apologize, I am going to be reading this for the recording. The subject of medication and mental health can involve important medical decisions. To help AA members find the right balance and minimize the risk of relapse, a group of physicians who are members of AA developed the suggestions that follow. Additionally, to provide a professional perspective, two healthcare professionals who are familiar with AA were asked to review this pamphlet and found it to represent an accurate cross-section of alcoholics that have come into contact within their professional capacity. Understandably, some AA members must take prescribed medications for serious medical problems. However, it is generally accepted that the misuse of prescription medication and other drugs can threaten the achievement and maintenance of sobriety. It may be possible to minimize the threat of relapse if the following suggestions are taken. So the first one is active participation in the AA program of recovery as a major safeguard against alcoholic relapse. So some comments about this. What's amazing is compared to the early days, many people become separated from alcohol for the very first time in hospitals, rehabs, medical treatment facilities. And it's now today very common to be medicated in some places. And sometimes this can amount to over-medication. And what's crazy is that alcohol intoxication, alcohol dependence, alcohol withdrawal can mimic many diagnoses, perhaps all diagnoses in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 5th edition. Oh, I should update this. We're now on the 5th edition text revision. And in nearly every single disorder that's listed in there, in the catalog of all the mental disorders that exist and also those that are theorized to exist. It says, make sure to differentiate, make sure that the differential diagnosis, make sure it's not alcoholism, make sure it's not alcohol dependence, make sure it's not alcohol withdrawal, because so many symptoms can mimic it. A funny note about me, I've actually never met the diagnosis for alcohol dependence disorder. I've never had withdrawals from alcohol. Let's get that muted. Thank you. However, I absolutely have alcoholism because I can't predict what's going to happen when I take a drink. And I take a drink even when I realize it's a horrible idea to take a drink because I momentarily forget how horrible of an idea it is. And lastly, I've got that unmanageability. I'm really good at feeling bad, and I don't know if I'll ever be bad at it. And I think something outside of me is going to fix it, and it's always going to be something spiritual, is what I discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous. So here's the other thing, being completely honest with your daughter and yourself. Oops. Hey, there we go. About the way you take your medicine, let your doctor know if you skip doses or take more medicine than prescribed. So this is one of the key places where a sponsor or another person close to the AA, to the alcoholic or patient, can be tremendously helpful as a medical advocate. So here's the thing. Psychiatry depends on us to be historians of our own experience. We're supposed to like tell like what's going on, the experiences we're having. And so we're supposed to report our symptoms, our history. We're supposed to be able to let people know, let our psychiatrist know, or a provider know if there are any changes in our behavior or our experience. Even without alcoholism recovery, so many medications themselves make it really difficult to reflect on or remember or to recount our experiences accurately. So if your sponsee is a consumer of psychiatric services, what I'll do is if I have a sponsee who's seeing a psychiatrist, I'll ask them, hey, do you want me to be able to come with you? And if they say yes, psychiatrists, physicians, medical professionals love it when family members, loved ones, people who care about the person are able to come in and provide and be a medical advocate. It's one of the things that's incredibly helpful. And then having these observations, these reports from family members, from helping your sponsee provide an accurate history of treatments and how they respond to current and past medications. One of the things that terrified my wife before I got sober is that I didn't think I had alcoholism. I thought I had many other issues going on. I was actually working at a children's hospital in Greater Los Angeles at the time. When I hit my bottom, and I was working on my PhD. I was at the tail end of it, finished all my coursework, and I was having insomnia. I was commuting from Long Beach to LA, commuting like an hour and a half every day by car. Sleeping maybe 3 or 4 hours a night, maybe only 2 or 3 nights a week, and having what I thought was sleep deprivation psychosis, and having panic attacks at work, and all these symptoms. So I thought it was psychiatric, and I went to a psychiatrist for the first time, and went on a train of multiple medications, and I would come home, and my wife would ask me. She would say, "Did you tell your doctor you developed a stutter? Did you tell him that you're having difficulty completing sentences, not to mention having paragraphs that make sense?" And I said, "Nope." I said, "Well, what happened?" And I would say, "Well, he gave me another medication to try." And this would terrify her. And the reason was, in that 15 minutes where I'm supposed to tell my doctor what's happening for me, I can't even remember. So it's so helpful to have a family member, a sponsor, a friend come and advocate. Explain to your doctor that you no longer drink alcohol, that you're trying a new way of life and recovery. The pamphlet even says you might want to provide your prescriber with a copy of the AA pamphlet, medications and other drugs, or this pamphlet itself. Your district, your area has a cooperation with a professional community committee. Here's a link to the entire workbook. And here's a link to all of the cooperation with the professional community pamphlets and materials. and that are fantastic documents to bring to your provider or to bring to your sponsee psychiatrist. Oops, oh crap. Nope, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to go back to, I hit that thing. There we go. And let your doctor know at once if you have a desire to take more medicine or if you have side effects that make you feel worse. Be sensitive to warnings about changes in your behavior when you start a new medication or when your dose has changed. So if you're advocating for your sponsee, just help them communicate their needs to their prescriber. And here's the crazy thing. Every single medication, every single pharmacotherapeutic medication can cause the symptom that it's intended to treat. And it can also cause the opposite of what it's intended to treat, especially two times, while taking it and while withdrawing from it. For instance, an antidepressant can cause greater depression or its opposite, a manic episode. Oops, what is, there we go. Here we go, sorry. If you feel that your doctor does not understand your problems, consider making an appointment with a physician who has experience in the treatment of alcoholism. It's the next recommendation from the pamphlet. So here are some things to keep in mind. This is from a lovely book by Peter Breggin called Medication Madness, Your Drug May Be Your Problem, and another book called Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, A Guide for Prescribers, Therapists, Patients, and Their Families. A few things to keep in mind. Most continuing education for prescribers, for physicians, for psychiatrists, for psychologists, is provided by pharmaceutical companies. And the gold standard for taking medications is always one drug at a time, whether you're starting or weaning from a psychiatric medication. You're allowed to ask if you can wean off more slowly than recommended. In other words, stepping down half as much and twice as slowly. And never go cold turkey off a medication that you've slowly built up unless your prescriber says that this is a good idea, and never wean off without medical supervision. And the reason why for that third bullet, ask if you can wean off more slowly than recommended, is one of the things that happens sometimes is somebody will wean off an antidepressant, for instance, and their depression will increase because they're going off too quickly. And so going off a little bit more slowly will help to mitigate that, help to make that not happen. What's happening? There we go. So the pamphlet goes on to say, from the earliest days of Alcoholics Anonymous, it has been clear that many alcoholics have a tendency to become dependent on drugs other than alcohol. There have been tragic incidents of alcoholics who have struggled to achieve sobriety only to develop a serious problem with a different drug. Time and time again, AA members have described frightening and sobriety-threatening episodes that could be related to the misuse of medication or other drugs. Experience suggests that while some prescribed medications may be safe for most non-alcoholics when taken according to a doctor's instructions, it is possible that they may affect the alcoholic in a different way. It is often true that these substances, when used without medical supervision, can create dependence as devastating as dependence on alcohol. Therefore, it is always important to consult your doctor if you think medication may be helpful or needed. So here are some concluding suggestions, and they're just my personal experience, both professionally and personally. If you're sponsoring a newcomer before they prescribe medications and you're there with them, with their prescriber, ask this prescriber, you can have your sponsee ask the prescriber whether they can safely remain unmedicated while taking the steps. Second suggestion, if you're sponsoring a newcomer who's leaving a facility where they were medicated, have them ask, or you can ask the prescriber whether all the medications need to be continued and see whether the prescriber will assist a step down to the lowest dosage the AA steps are started, using the earlier suggestions, which are half the step down, twice as slowly, one medication at a time, unless otherwise indicated. So an example of that is if my doctor says, cut this in half And do that for 2 weeks, and then cut that in half again and do that for 2 weeks. Then I can ask, oh, can I cut it into, can I take 3/4 for 4 weeks? And unless there's some sort of toxic effect or some sort of negative side effect of taking the medication, no prescriber will tell you it's a terrible idea to do. They might just tell you it's unnecessary to do, but there's no contraindication to do. Next suggestion. If you're sponsoring a newcomer with long-term medication use who's stable, take them through the steps. When they begin sponsoring others, you might join them in meeting with their prescriber, or they can, you can help them just advocate for themselves to see whether they can begin titrating down. And titrating just means removing just a little bit at a time to the lowest optimal dosage. And the guiding idea is the least pharmacotherapy necessary for health, well-being, and the greatest access to spiritual experience. In other words, I want to have the lowest amount of chemicals on board for me to have the highest amount of God on board. One of the things I do is if someone's on medications and I take them through the 12 steps, and then they go to their prescriber and go down to the lowest dosage, maybe sometimes even off their medications entirely, we go through the steps again. We go through the steps again so they can have a new experience. Never go on or off medications without medical supervision. And this last one, take a course in mental health first aid. I don't know if y'all know about mental health first aid. Every single first lady generally has a nonprofit, something that they advocate. And a few first ladies ago, mental health first aid was the thing. And I'd never heard of it before. And I'm a psychologist. And I started seeing these little ads pop up. And one of the earliest ads I saw for mental health first aid that was funded by the first lady they had all these testimonials, and one was a trucker, and he says, you know, I was driving my big rig, and I was driving over that suicide bridge, and I saw some man outside of his car about to jump off, and I pull over my rig, and I get out, and I talk to him just like they taught me to do in mental health first aid. Next thing I know, he's in my cab, and we're driving over to the hospital. I'm getting him to medical attention. And for me, we're required in most states to take CPR and first aid in high school. And I really think that mental health first aid might actually be more important than CPR and regular first aid. And that's just my personal experience, because it's just a fabulous thing to have. And lastly, we're here at questions. So I am going to go ahead and stop my screen share. And let Andy feed me some questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Hiro. I see the applause emoji there. Everyone, show your appreciation, please. We've got one question so far. You can submit those in the chat, or Steve's got a pencil and paper there. If you want to write them down, he can put them in the chat for you. So we've got one question so far. Question, how do I handle as a sponsee who won't take their medication? I have 2 sponsees with schizophrenia and refuse to discuss with their doctors.
That's a tough one. One of my favorite things about Alcoholics Anonymous is that, two things. When I first came into AA, all I really wanted was the monkey off my back. And I think the steps are written the way they are. And the big book is sequenced the way it is for a reason. It wasn't until step 3, it wasn't until pages 60 to 63 in the big book, that I realized that I was the monkey and I'm supposed to rid myself of the monkey, which is me, you know, like my selfishness and self-centeredness. And it tells me that the first realization of step 3, right after the ABCs, and how it works, is that that I realize that my life, run on my will, can never be a success. And which is confusing. Like when I became sober, became chair of the psychology department at a small Buddhist university, I thought that my job description was to manage the department, and I became so spiritually sick. And every spring I'd be complaining to my sponsor, Bob, and I'd be telling him, you know, like, I got to quit this job. And he's like, don't quit. You could be useful. Write some more inventory. Come out to Vegas. You know, read it to me. And every year I would stay up until 2018 when I realized I can no longer be helpful and left academia. By the way, after I left academia, my wife, who I've known since 1991, told me, I've known since 1991 that you can never be happy in academia, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. So not only do I could get confused about managing my own life, but also about managing others. And my job as a sponsor isn't to manage the life of my sponsee. When I first learned about the traditions and learned in tradition 9 that leaders are just humble servants, that we have that and learned that you know, we don't have any bosses, and just learned all these traditions about how to make AA continue for our grandchildren's 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 grandchildren. And hopefully it'll be here then. And the way we do that, we take care of that now, is by taking care of our home group, by taking care of our district and our area. When I learned about that, I learned all these things, and I immediately became traditions police. And then when I learned about the concepts in concept 12, which are the warranties, the bill of rights of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that none of us can be personally punitive, and that we don't have to have any. We're not here to perform acts of government. We have governance, where we have a group conscience and we get to vote about what we think would be best for our group, our district, our area, or for all of AA. And as soon as I learned about this, you know, I would get annoyed at traditions police, and then I would want to like police their behavior. And then I realized, oh my God, now I'm like internal affairs. I mean, even the police department doesn't like internal affairs, and so here I am trying to govern the governors. And then I realized I love that in the essay in tradition 9. It says that we don't need any disciplinarians in AA. That we already have two great disciplinarians in our alcoholism and in our recovery. We've got great suffering and great love. Now, the problem with something like schizophrenia is it's kind of like when I don't know what the problem is and I'm trying to solve the problem with other things that aren't solving the problem because I don't know what the problem is, whether it's my alcoholism, whether it's me trying to fix my wife, not realizing that I need to actually get back in the center of the triangle. Or whether it's me trying to treat what I didn't know was alcoholism with pharmacotherapy before I got sober. And this might be one of those situations where I don't know if, first, of course, my sponsor would always say, you know, you'll definitely want to pray about that. Second, it may be helpful if they identify as a schizophrenic, or as if they identify with meeting the criteria for schizophrenia, that they might help. They might be helped by others who meet that diagnosis. I love the National Association for Mental Illness. I just love it. It's basically people with mental illness and families of people with mental illness helping other people with mental illness and other families of mental illness. It's like AA, except it's for families with mental illness. And just like in Alcoholics Anonymous, where we share our experience, because my experience is actually far more important than my knowledge to myself and to others. That might be something that might help as well. But it's such a difficult situation. And it might help if they identify as an alcoholic with mental health issues, it might actually help to read the pamphlet together. the first section of the pamphlet is all sponsees who talk about their experience with psychiatry and with sponsorship. And then the second section is all about sponsors who end up sponsoring folks who turn out to require medication, even to be available for and to remain in Alcoholics Anonymous. So those are a couple options that might be helpful for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Hero. We've got a few more questions that have come in now. So the next question, how do you know if faith alone is enough?
How do I know if faith alone is enough? Oh, wait, here, I love this. Kristen just direct messaged me and wrote, and I'm just going to read this out loud because this is really wonderful. My experience with sponsoring women with mental health issues is to kindly encourage them to see their doctors, take their meds as prescribed, and then I let go. Perhaps suggest an inventory or step 6 and 7 if they're resistant. I don't get involved in their diagnosis, treatment of those issues. Great answer, Hero, and very diplomatic. So thank you so much. So how do I know if faith alone is enough? This is a tricky question. One of the things I love about my sponsor, Bob, is that first, he's does so much more service than I do. And he does a scary amount of service. And prior to lockdown, he was gone from his home like 40 weekends out of the year, spreading the good news of Alcoholics Anonymous. Right now he's down in Australia with his wife and doing a workshop down there. And one of the things that Bob, that I love that Bob talks about is Bob has sponsored, I want to say by this point, 5 men of the cloth, and 3 or 4 of them have died of alcoholism. And he likes to say that these are men who have far more faith than you or I. And this is one of those places where Bob talks about the 11th step and how there's a difference between conscious contact with God and faith. And the example he gives this really great AA parable. He says, I can drive you out to Lake Powell, one of the largest aquifers in the world, and you can have conscious contact with that lake. You can swim in the lake. You could ill-advisedly drink from the lake. And then you can get back in the car after toweling off, because he has a very nice car. And then he could drive you into the desert for half an hour, and he can drop you off, and then you can go home. And now that you're in the middle of the desert, you can have absolute faith that that lake is there, that Vegas is somewhere. And you can have absolute faith that there's water available for you. But unless you have conscious contact with that water within 3 to 5 days, you'll die. So there's also the piece where Wilson in the Big Book quotes the other book and says, faith without works is dead. And it was explained to me when I was new, you could pray for the bus to come, but if you see it coming and you're not the bus stop yet, you better run. So I think it's really a matter of, for me, faith alone has never been enough. It's always required me to do something. And actually, it's often required me to do something that I don't believe will help with this thing, like the whole piece of in step 10 of whenever selfishness, resentment, dishonesty, or fear crop up, I ask God to remove it at once, make amends quickly if necessary, discuss it with someone, and then turn my attention to someone I can help. Thy will, not mine, be done throughout the day. And somehow helping somebody else is going to help me with my terror about, I don't know, this deadline or tax season or finances or what have you. And weirdly enough, it does. So I hope that was a helpful answer.
Thank you, Hero. The next question, Is healthcare an outside issue?
Is healthcare an outside issue? Well, we can turn to the pamphlets themselves. The pamphlets, the AA literature tells us what are inside issues and what are outside issues. And the fact that we have two pamphlets on mental health says that they're important for us. They're important things for sobriety. The point of my understanding of the point of outside issues is it comes directly from tradition 6 and 10 about not causing controversy and things that don't take us away from our primary purpose in tradition 5 of carrying the message of our home group, carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to the alcoholic who still suffers, whether they be new or in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. And whereas if you'll allow me to rephrase your question, is the question of whether my sponsee should be on medication an outside issue? Is it something that I should have an opinion about? Alcoholics Anonymous has an opinion about that question. And the answer is, we have no opinion about it. That's why we have medical professionals to help.
Thank you, Hero. Next question. What if I, someone who has been sober for a while, wants to include in my shares from the podium my experience, strength, and hope regarding the negativity I experienced about my psychiatric medications and that I was considered not really sober? I ended up going off my medications without doctor's help or advice. I stopped going to AA. I was 9 years sober at the time. I did not lose my sobriety, but I did end up losing a lot and ended up in a board and care home for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I can repeat that if you want me to, or send it to you.
No, that's perfect. Oh, I'm so sorry that happened. You know, so much of this goes back to early Alcoholics Anonymous, some of the second wave folks in AA. And so much of it goes back to my grand sponsor, like in LA, the two big, the lore, the gossip, the stereotype is that Pacific Group and its sister organization, my home group, the Bellflower Big Book Group, are anti-medication home groups. And I can understand how we get that reputation. So the question that I understand is, and so I'm so sorry that happened to you. The question I understand is it okay for me to share about that from the podium? The first thing is I would take that into prayer, and I would take that into take that to your sponsor. And the prayer I prayed today and the prayer I pray before speaking most times is, God, grant me the power to carry the message you'd have me carry. I also love the promise that I turned into a prayer out of the fear inventory section of the big book. God, please demonstrate through me what you can do. I think that if you shared that in my home group, you would absolutely help some people. I'm sad and I'm ashamed to say that if you shared that in my home group, you will probably get comments from individual members saying, what are you doing that for? And and that's hard because I find that upsetting. And yet I also recognize that that the members of my home group are like me. They're spiritually sick. You know, how can I help show them? God, please help me show them the same patience, pity, and tolerance I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Cheerfully, possibly the most difficult adverb in the big book. What I do know is that if you hear, and you probably already do this, if you hear someone sharing about that, you can go take them aside and give them your experience, because your experience is valuable. That suffering sounds horrific. But the wonderful thing about, and the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is all of my suffering, all the horrific things I went through are now useful to someone else. I hope that's a helpful answer. Oh, one more thing. I was in Vegas. I don't remember if it was for the State Line Retreat, which my sponsor puts on every December, or if it was for the Derelicts Retreat, which is a retreat just for the sponsorship chain, the sponsees and grand sponsees. But I joined my sponsor to go pick up Clancy, my grand sponsor. And you know, of course, I'm the bag boy because you know I'm the sponsee. So I get Clancy's luggage and put in the back of Bob's trunk there at McCarran Airport. I'm sitting in the back, and I'm just glued. Like, this is the best TV show ever, and I'm just listening to their conversation. And at one point, Clancy says, and I don't remember what led up to this. He says, "You know, the last time I told someone to go off their medication was right around 1980." And when he asked a famous actor, he asked her to go off her medication. And she went into a really big manic episode that almost cost her life and certainly cost her sobriety. And Clancy was expressing regret. He sounded so regretful. And it's so strange that a founder of a home group can confess this, and yet members of the home group, some members can still have some kind of derogatory attitude toward medication, an attitude that is at best a prejudice and at worst oppressive and playing doctor. I found that really moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Hero. This next question dovetails in with that nicely. How do you respond to someone who tells a sponsee they are not sober if they take medications prescribed by their mental health doctor? It has come up in my work with CPC, that's cooperation with the professional community. Schizophrenia was the issue, but it could apply to other mental issues.
That's really a hard one. Again, it saddens me. I would prefer that people would respond, that sponsors would respond to their sponsees more like my sponsor, saying things like, "I don't know. I don't know how to stay sober while smoking marijuana every day." Or that it's my experience that, but even that's difficult because, you're not sober if. All right, there's a member of my home group one of my favorite speakers from my home group. And I get a lot of his, I used to get a lot of his grand sponsees and great grand sponsees. And sometimes once one of his sponsees asked me to sponsor him. And especially or folks that would that tried to be a sponsee of his or his grand sponsees and sponsees. And I don't know if he still does this, but for a period of time he would say, and his sponsees would mimic him and say, you know, I can't sponsor you if you're on that medication. I don't know how to sponsor people on that medication. I've never been on that medication and taken the steps. And now this man has never asked me my opinion. But if he had asked me, I would say, I understand you sponsor someone on dialysis. Have you ever been on dialysis? Are you currently on dialysis? I understand you've sponsored people with cancer. Have you ever had cancer? Have you ever had chemotherapy? Have you ever, I understand you, and you know, the list goes on. And of course we can sponsor those folks. We just need to have a little bit of help. We just need to have a little bit of experience from people who have experience. When I first came into AA, I just wanted to change everything that I thought was wrong with Alcoholics Anonymous, with my home group. What was shown to me over and over in a really kind way was to be the change that I wanted to see in my home group. You know, that paraphrase in Gandhi, to be the attraction, to be the person who people can come to if they're feeling oppressed about anything in the home group. Again, that deeply saddens me to know about that experience and when sponsees do that. My experience is sorrow. My experience is wanting someone in the home group to be available for those members who are struggling with, do I follow medical advice or do I follow my sponsor's advice? That's a rock and a hard place right there. That's a very, very difficult place. And I hope that I could be, and I hope that you can be a source of support, love, and inspiration for that person and for the other members of your home group. I wish I had a better response. I really do. Thank you.
Thank you, Hero. We've got three more questions. The next one, how do you handle a sponsee who is uncooperative with talking to their doctor about their alcoholism and they are not progressing in the steps?
It's tough because I think progression in the steps, I've tried everything. I mean, it's because we know exactly how amazing the steps are, having completed them. About to do something or going through something can feel awful. Like writing my fourth step was no fun. Having had written my fourth step was cool, except I had to tell my sponsor, and thankfully he wasted no time, just like it says in the big book. And within 72 hours, we're at his kitchen table, my first sponsor, Bill. And it was no fun when he asked me, you know, is there anything you're going to take to your grave? Is there anything, any secrets that'll kill you or take you out of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I was like, that was no fun. But it was great telling. It wasn't even fun telling him, but it was really, really cool afterwards when he gave me the AA cure. You know, like he said, oh yeah, me too. Anything else? Is that it? I've tried it all. I've tried the carrot and the stick. I've tried it, and I don't like being the stick. I've never gotten the stick. None of my sponsors. My home group's known for strong sponsorship, and I have this like parody or the stereotype of what that means about, like, this is what you do, shut up and put, take the cotton out of your mouth and put it in your, you know, and put it out of your ears, put it in your mouth, all that stuff. And I've never been sponsored that way. And why do I like mimic that? I don't know. My sponsors have all been nothing but kind and loving. And always in a space of, if I'm not willing to do something, like, all right, well, call me tomorrow. I hope I see you at the meeting. Let me know how that works for you. And not the kind of, well, how's that working for you? Kind of contemptuous above attitude, but rather this really kind of gentle, like, please keep me informed, you know? And I go right back to that tradition nine thing. Sometimes it's the hardest thing to let a sponsee have an experience that I feel is unnecessary, or I feel that I really wish I could save them from the suffering of their own best thinking. Because I know exactly what that is. I've been through that. I want to save them from that. And I'll do everything I can. And sometimes I'll experiment with the stick. You might die if you keep doing that. I might stuff like that'll still come out of my mouth, you know. I try to do it with a sense of self-deprecating humor. I borrow some from my sponsor, Bob. Bob often, like, I'll be going through something and he'll give a suggestion. I'll be like, yeah, I'm gonna do it this way. And he'll say, well, you know, the good news is if this doesn't kill you, you'll really be of help to other people. And he does it in a loving way. And the last thing I want to do is respond in a way that helps a sponsee to not come back. And I don't often know what that response is, which is why I need God and a sponsor and the group conscience of other people who have sponsored folks who might be similar to my sponsee. It's a mystery, man. I just don't know. I don't know what in me is going to be useful for someone else. I think I know, and I'm often wrong. And that's a really hard one. Thank you so much for that question.
Thank you, Hero. The next question: would you suggest adult children of alcoholics, because it has made a huge impact in my recovery as well as AA?
You know, I don't have any direct experience of ACA. I know it's been helpful to people, but I do know members of my home group who started in ACA and moved into AA, and some that do both but don't talk about the ACA in AA because they don't want judgment. I think I would send them to those people. In fact, if my number's right next to my name, if you text me your name and that's something that you like talking to other alcoholics who suffer, who come from alcoholic families, heck, I'll send people your way, like, because I don't have experience with that. Because what's been shown to me over and over is when my sponsor doesn't have experience in something, he'll just point me to another AA member who has, that's always been helpful for me. Thank you. Oh, there's Marika. It's good to see Marika. Yay.
All right. Last question. I have worked for 35 years in mental health. How much, if I interacted in my sponsee's medication provider, can I lean on my own extensive knowledge and understanding of medications?
You know, in my PhD program, in my counseling psychology PhD program, there's this wonderful metaphor about how to sit across from another person, and which has to do with power, positioning ourselves in power. And so in sponsorship, I like to think of like three positions I can take. One is one above, where like I'm the person with knowledge, and well, you better. And the second is one below, and I love doing one below, where it's like I really don't know what your experience is. Could you tell me? Like, because my sponsee is the expert on their own experience. I don't know what their experience is. My favorite though is one across with a sponsee where I'm not better, I'm not worse. I'm just another alcoholic who happens to have a little bit more time, who's gone through a book with a sponsor. Physicians though, they really like it if we come one down. they really seem to prefer that we're like, well, you know, I know a little bit about this. Is this one of the side effects of that medication? They're like, oh, you're right. That is. Thank you for pointing that out. So, or even one across. I think one above with a medical provider generally doesn't work so well. Approach, the angle of approach is really, really important for that. Hey, all y'all. I just wanted to thank Marika on here because she and her alternate DCMC at the time actually helped to create the proposal that ended up being this pamphlet. And she's currently she's currently chair of area District 4 in Area 9 here in Long Beach. So that's a beautiful thing.
Hero, Marika alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I got the times confused. I thought 11 Central Time was 10 Pacific. Well,
that's okay. You can text me. You can call me. And I want to just make sure from Andy if there's any other questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, those are all the questions, I think.
Well, that is all the questions. Oh, then, Marika, please, go ahead.
Will this recording, I noticed it's being recorded. Where will it be available?
Oh, Andy's number is next to his name, and he'd be a good person to...
I can text you for that.
You can text me for that. I could give you Andy's number. I know where he lives.
Okay, thanks, Hero.
And I'll be doing this again next month for Seattle Intergroup. And then I guess I'm coming back for to do this in Mental Health Awareness Month.
We're looking at that in Kansas City on the Missouri side. I think there's a group on the Missouri side that we're talking about doing that. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for coming out. Thank you so much to our presenter here. If everyone wants to, you know, show some love, some appreciation, really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you all so much.
Together. All right. And we can wrap it up with the we version of the Serenity Prayer for those who want. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the difference. Thank you all. Good to see everyone.
Thank you so much. I'll be in touch, Hero. Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you, Hero, so much.
Next here, my good friend Aaron from Toronto. He says to say hello to you. He's he's out playing with his son Asher today, and that's why he
could be here. Oh good. I love him so much.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you. This is just it was just great to be able to join in today. And got a lot of new resources. Really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, friends. Bye bye.
Bye.
Steve here. I do quote your friend Steve, the other Steve A, and the little prayer you say before some of your meetings about God, I am willing to be embarrassed today, but please don't make it necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that one. God, I'm willing to be embarrassed, but I hope it's not necessary. Oh, very good.
Yeah,
guys, this was fantastic.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for doing this, Hero. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great questions.
Yeah. All right. Steve said,
wonderful.
Thank you and Joe for being out there in person and setting this all up, the equipment and everything. So, yeah, hope everyone has a great rest of your day.
Sandy,
right on. All right, take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you all.